Welcome back. You're listening to Global Village. This is News Talk 106 to 108. Do get in touch with the show by texting us here at 53106 at a cost of 30 cents. People have been immigrating for centuries, and although the method of transport has got easier, stricter immigration control has made relocation far more difficult. The journey of a migrant does not end when they arrive on the shores of their new home. Those who do succeed in immigrating often face a challenging settlement process which involves poverty, isolation, loss of social status, insecurity of immigration status, discrimination, and racism. Navigating the Irish immigration system is incredibly challenging and stressful. I was in the system for a decade, and although I came out the other side with my Irish citizenship, every time I see a brown envelope with the Irish harp on it, with my name on it in the post, I am gripped with fear. But one organization that provides assistance and legal representation to individuals regarding their immigration status is the Immigrant Council of Ireland. I'm now joined by Catherine Cosgrave, Legal Services Manager with the Immigrant Council of Ireland. Welcome to Global Village.
Good evening, Dil. Great to see you.
Great to see you, Catherine. And I've known you for years at this stage.
That's right,
you know?
Yeah.
And I always say this when the Immigrant Council of Ireland comes on the show. Sure, the first bit of legal advice I got my own immigration status was from the Immigrant Council of Ireland. In fact, it was from your colleague, Hilka Becker. So it's lovely to see that a decade later, you're still doing the same work.
That's right, yes. And largely, the issues haven't changed over that period of time, although we see improvements and things.
Ever the optimist.
Yes, but you know, largely the issues that people contact us with are largely the same. Yeah.
So let's start with the work that ICI do, because you do so much apart from legal advice as well.
That's right. So we work across a whole variety of issues. But first and foremost, I suppose we're an independent law centre. So we have services provided to the public, and that comprises of a helpline that's available to all of the public to call. Anyone who wants to call us, I'll just give the number. It's 01674 0200, and that's open every morning except for Wednesdays. And typically the helpline services between 5,000 and 10,000 calls a year, and it can be on anything. Just yesterday I took a call from somebody who hasn't even arrived in Ireland yet and they're seeking information, and that's not uncommon. But it's right through to the very end of the process you just mentioned there, you know, gaining access to citizenship and security of status.
The holy grail.
But it can be everything along the way, right through to, you know, deportation and removal from the state and family life in Ireland and bringing family members. So, you know, everything that is possible comes in through the service. We also have two other kind of services that we provide. One is which is an advocacy service. So through all of those calls, we identify individuals who are particularly vulnerable or may need assistance or difficulty accessing a proper legal service. They don't necessarily need legal representation, but they do need somebody to clearly structure that application for them, or a bit more hand-holding through the process. So we do that to the extent that it is possible for us to do it. And typically we take those cases on referral from the Citizens Information Centres, for example, where they provide a lot of information at first-tier applications and helping people out. But when it becomes a bit more complex, or the case has progressed to a certain point and they're not quite sure which way to point it, they'll refer it in. And then the third kind of service that we have, or part of the service, is the Law Centre. And that's where we take on individuals for one-to-one legal advice and representation, and we actually formally represent them with our solicitors in the service. So that's just one part. And then we have a broad mission within the organisation to do research and policy work around emerging needs of migrants. And we have a couple of projects on the go about that at any given time. So,
because recently I had your colleagues on the programme, Denise Charlton, about they went over to Lesbos to set up a law
centre.
To set up a legal aid service there.
That's right, yeah. So I went myself back in March of this year, and then Denise and Brian Killoran and a couple of other individuals went over in April specifically to look at the camps in northern France. We were concerned, as a first-line service provider frontline service provider here in Ireland, that we get calls from overseas, including from individuals who are in France, and we felt it was important to go to the camps to see it firsthand and to look at the conditions and to identify, with our own very limited resources, how could we best support the work that is being done primarily by volunteers at this stage and in a very unstructured way. It was also triggered by the fact that colleagues that we have worked with in various projects in the UK have set up volunteering lawyer projects there to provide legal advice and representation, particularly to unaccompanied minors who are in France, and to provide a kind of strategic legal intervention to reunify them with family members. So we wanted to go there to look at the work that they were doing and to see, because obviously we're aware through our own services, but also media reporting, that there are arrivals into Ireland itself from northern France. And could we, and you know, most of the people who are involved in undertaking that journey do so in very precarious and volatile circumstances. And it's completely with risk, and particularly for young and very vulnerable unaccompanied children.
But at least if they get advice from you in Calais, they can then try and navigate their way maybe in a safer fashion as opposed to...
Yes, yeah. And that feeds into a campaign that the ICI, along with other migrant organisations here in Ireland, such as NASC and the Irish Refugee Council, are promoting actively, which is safe and legal passage. So that was why we went. It was to really, obviously, the vast majority of people who are in those camps are seeking to access family members in the UK, but we felt there were likely to be people there who were seeking to come to Ireland. And if so, without a full-time presence on the ground, how could we feed into the structures or informal structures that are there to raise awareness about the services that we can offer and to link in better with UK lawyers if they were identifying through their practice individuals who may be expressing an interest in going to Ireland or who have family members in Ireland that they were actively seeking to reunify with. So
you said at the start of the interview that unfortunately the queries you're getting are still very similar to what you got 10 years ago.
Yes.
Because the Irish immigration system hasn't changed that much, or if not at all. And unfortunately, the myths are still out there, Catherine. I think a lot of people listening to this probably still think, it's really easy to come to Ireland and get Irish citizenship. Sure, people are just, you know, they come in on a whim. But the reality is, it's really quite different.
Yes, it is. I mean, obviously, on some levels, Ireland is very open. We're members of the European Union. We have a lot of free movement within the European Union itself. And I suppose that in itself is something that people often tend to forget. Like, where do the bulk of our foreign national migrants come from? And they forget that actually...
They're British,
yes. And so, like, it tends to be very focused on a small minority of individuals in terms of what the conversation is. But we get calls from all of those people. So increasingly, actually, in recent weeks, we've had calls from British citizens.
Yeah, about Brexit.
About Brexit and whatnot. So it's really very broad, the implications of changes in law and policy for individuals.
Because the term migrant really does encompass everyone.
Yes, all non-Irish people living in Ireland. Yes. And like people who are here, often who have very secure resident status themselves, have issues for their family members who may be seeking to join them. Or, you know, there is a lack of clarity that if their family members do join them, the circumstances in which they will be allowed to reside here. So while it is possible for visa applications to be made, some of the issues that present are, well, how long is it going to take? Or, you know, then if they do come, what will they be allowed to do? And if they're not allowed to work immediately, when, if ever, might that happen? And particularly something that we're looking at the moment is about the rights of children who come to Ireland, not just as unaccompanied minors in the asylum process. That's a very discreet issue. But for children who come here as migrants themselves, either
to join
family members and they grow up here, at what point do they achieve an independent resident status and what are their rights?
And can they go to college?
Yes. And then obviously in more difficult circumstances, we deal increasingly in our services with children who have ended up in care for some reason. And there is a total lack of clarity regarding the rights of migrant children in care. Indeed, even just first and foremost to access independent advice about their situation, and particularly if they're a foreign national child, about the options open to them in the immigration system.
Because often their status is connected to the parent.
It is, yeah. I mean, we have this default position here in Ireland that children are considered to be appendages of their parent, and like whatever their parent's status might be, then it kind of follows that, and then there's bizarre ways of working
that out. And it might not be the child's best interest, you know, so.
Exactly. And, you know, we have come across, I think there is growing an awareness of the issues faced by migrant children in care, and that there's more proactive intervention at an earlier stage, certainly in the Dublin area anyway. as a result of training with Guardian Ad Litem and with social workers and whatnot. But it's still sad that we get referrals of individuals who have been discharged from care without any attention being paid to their resident status, and we're having to resolve it after the fact, where there have been issues regarding the adequacy of care planning when they leave care and access to residence and social protections and whatnot. So we're currently actually
talking about children here.
Yes, yes. Well, they're now adults at the time. You know, technically on the face of it, they're adults by the time they present into our service. They may be 20 at that stage, but you know, we like to get those referrals in
before.
Earlier, and certainly as well before they turn 16, because that's when there's a statutory obligation for them to be registered with the GNIB, and very, very few people are actually aware of that, including often the state services providing for their care. So again, some children will be registered, but others they might not be for some reason. And so we're doing a piece of research at the moment on the very specific needs of migrant children, and particularly around, as you mentioned, their access to education when they become school leavers. And this is also an issue that has been raised for individuals who may have come here for a very long time ago, but their parents are undocumented and the children have been living here for, you know, 10, 12, 13, 14 years. And often the fact that their family members are undocumented comes as a surprise to themselves, and the issue only raises its head when they become school leavers.
So and then they try to access college and they can't.
Yes, yes.
You know, because the issue there about migrant children, totally resonates with me, because I remember growing up in Italy, and my, you know, even though I was born in Rome, I had Sri Lankan citizenship, and my visa was connected to my parents.
Yes.
Because I didn't live there till the age of 18, I didn't qualify for Italian citizenship. And I remember the frustration I felt, that I remember going into the Questura, the Italian police, where they do all the, you know, they decide on all migrant issues and, you know, your migrant status and all that. And they were like, no, because once you're 18, you can't stay in the country because you're an adult. I remember being really frustrated with that, because I was born in Italy. At that stage, I felt more Italian than I felt Sri Lankan. But this country just didn't want to have anything to do with me. And that was because I was 18 and now I was an adult, and they expected me to leave the country. And I remember feeling so just disappointed, like total sense of dislocation. Like there was no place that I had a sense of belonging. So I can just imagine how upsetting and stressful it must be for a child who spent, as you said, 12, 13, 14 years here and been told, look, you're not really an Irish citizen and you can't really participate fully in our society.
Yeah, I mean, it's been narrated to me, like through the clients that I have worked with over the years, that it's the first time they started to feel a sense of otherness, that there was a difference actually. And that's, you know, really, really difficult for a person to have to deal with at that stage, particularly when they identify first and foremost with their peers.
I mean, you're a teenager. Life sucks anyway.
Yes. So, I mean, these are things that we're exploring at. And I do think it's reflective, not just in Ireland, but typically in many countries, you've just mentioned Italy there, that there's a real lack of forward planning. Like, so, you know, initially when I first started working in this area, there was no legislation around like the granting of work permits, for example. That has changed. But it was always a reaction. We need X now, so we'll provide for it in an ad hoc, reactive sort of way, and without thinking that, well, if we allow a person to come as a migrant worker, what will their future needs be? What will Ireland's future needs be and whatnot? And that, you know, suddenly it was a great surprise when that migrant worker
got married, had
a child or, you know, what have you. Or, you know, had a wife outside of the country and wanted to bring them to Ireland, or indeed, you know, had a husband outside of the country.
How strange. You mean these are not jam jars we're talking about?
No. So, like, and these are really things that, like, I find it quite amazing that we continue to grapple with. So again, you know, an issue that presents very frequently into our service, despite the fact that we have raised it persistently since the outset, is around what are the rights of family members who come to Ireland to join either Irish citizens or other migrants who have moved to Ireland, if and when family relationships break down for lots of different reasons. But the total lack of clarity regarding retention of resident status on an independent basis, either when you remain still loved up and happy, but like after a period of time being gone, okay, you're still married, but like you get your own independent status with a right to work. So we still have a very much a system here that the first migrant comes, they have a work permit in most instances, but that the spouse follows and remains dependent until such time as they might get citizenship in the future. But there are mechanisms to access work permits, but they're very difficult. But more particularly, if that relationship does break down, there's a real lack of clarity about the entitlement, A, of the person to remain, and then B, what type of status they'll actually get.
And of course, being on the board of Women's Aid, you know, that whole feeds into domestic violence and domestic abuse, and so as because there is this disparity in power.
Yes, and like we have seen this for years, and like sadly, actually, while Inish responds very positively in my experience to individual cases, there was no information provided for a long time on the Inish website, for example, about what a person in these circumstances can do. Clearly, not everybody knows about our office. So,
And unfortunately, we have run out of time, Catherine. So, if people want to find out more, where can they go? What's the phone number again?
Well, they can visit our website, which is immigrantcouncil.ie, or if they have any kind of query and they want to call our helpline, specifically if they're looking for advice. But if it's just a general member of the public and they want to find out more information about the organisation, they can call the office, and it's 01674 0200.
And Catherine, we'll get you back on again because I think we've just barely started the conversation.
Yeah. Yes.
So my thanks to Catherine Cosgrave, who is the Legal Services Manager at the Immigrant Council of Ireland. Thank
you
very
much. It's a pleasure, Jill. Thanks.